Howdy, folks. I'm Jeff Gonzalez, former Navy SEAL, founder of Trident Concepts and host of the Bulletproof Workshop, powered by AR15.com, where we discuss knowledge, skills, and abilities to help bulletproof your everyday performance in whatever your field or passion. Welcome to Podcast 026. My next guest is a career educator who has done it all at all levels from private to public school systems. He's an avid proponent for sovereignty and freedom to build strong, resilient heroes of tomorrow. After seeing firsthand at various levels how the school system was teaching conformity and narrow-mindedness, he took action. Founding the Acton Academy Placer, a workplace for kids, and co-founder of Apogee Strong, an online mentorship program helping men live as servant leaders. He has led an educational revolution for parents and children who want more, who want a world-class education of responsibility, resilience, and self-confidence. He's a fellow podcaster, authority decentralizer, TED talker, kickboxer extraordinaire, and summit seeker. Please welcome to the show, Matt.
That was fantastic. Was that? Man, I didn't even send that to you. That was great. I'm going to steal that from myself.
Absolutely. I'm happy to share that.
Yeah, shoot that over, man.
You absolutely.
No, honored, sir.
Well, it's my pleasure. You know, we had a lot of interaction before the show, so I can't wait to get into it. I like to start the show off with a little background. Like, where do you hail from?
California born and raised.
Well, hold on. Before you do that, let's take a quick second. Let's take a quick second to thank our sponsors. Folks, this show is sponsored by 1776 Insurance. We're talking about comprehensive firearms collection coverage. That also includes your accessories as well as knives. If you've got questions or you want to learn more, please visit 1776insurance.com. All right, we're back. So you hail from Cali.
Yeah, California born and raised. But as of February of 2022, we are living in the mountains of North Carolina.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes, sir. Yeah,
talk about a little change.
Yeah, talk about a huge change. Huge change. We did it. Yeah, dude, I'm telling you. We did it like in phases, right? My wife and I both grew up in the Bay Area, which if you know anything about California, that's its own state in and of itself. Yeah. You know, and then kind of moved our way into the Sacramento area. We kind of lived in this little ranch town before we left. So it was a much more conservative part of California.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then took the big leap. So North Carolina is vastly different.
Nice. Yep. So California, born and raised. Mm-hmm. What in your childhood kind of, like, I like to dive into, was there something in your childhood that put you on the path that you're on right now? Mm. Did you have troubles in school? Did you find the school system not necessarily what you were hoping for? Did you struggle? What was the impetus that put you on the path?
Yeah, it's a good question, man. So, you know, if I look back on it, there's really two distinct things for me. So one, I figured out very early that school was a game. So when you say, did you have troubles in school?
Yeah.
Dude, I never got anything less than an A.
Wow.
And it's not because I'm crazy intelligent. It's because I figured out the game. I remember at 4 years old figuring out the game. They had grouped us. I remember this at 4 years. I went to school, started early. It was in kindergarten at 4 and a half. And I remember being grouped together. And I remember sitting at the table and I was looking and I was trying to figure out, okay, why are we in the groups that we're in? And I went, oh, okay, well, that color group, those are the kids they think need the most help with the reading that we're about to do. That's the group they think is next. They think we're the best readers here. So they're grouping us better by what they think they're. So I remember figuring that out early.
Wow.
And so I was very in tune with the game. So I got straight A's without putting any kind of effort in. And I don't say that to brag. I say that meaning it's a game, and if you figure out how to play the game, you can be good at school, but it doesn't mean anything for coming out.
So that's, yes.
It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean you're good at anything. I graduated 18, and I was like, okay, I know I'm good at playing the game of school. I know I'm good at sports. I know I'm good at girls. What does that mean for
life
moving forward, right? It means nothing.
Yes.
Well, I guess I'll go to college.
And it's more nothing.
And more nothing. I got better at girls.
Yeah.
I got better at sports.
Yeah.
But I still had nothing to offer. You know? I noticed that very early on. That was a big part of that.
And we talked a little bit about the struggles that I had as a parent with my boys mm-hmm. in the public school system. Mm-hmm. And I kept banging my head against the wall, trying to understand, how does this help them prepare for life?
Right.
What is this? What are you doing? I mean, reading, writing, arithmetic. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. But outside of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the transfer?
Exactly.
Well, see, and then that's the rub. Because it should be transferable. So I always make a different, I always differentiate. There's school and there's education.
Yes.
They are not the same thing.
100%.
We have been born into essentially a cult mentality that has said to us schooling equates to education. So we have this weird belief that as long as I do well in school, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be an educated individual, right?
Right.
So we have, if you, people don't really stop to think about it because, again, you're born into the cult. So if you're born into a cult, you don't necessarily start to question. If
you don't realize you're in a cult.
You don't realize it. Everybody else around you is in the cult. And you hear about people who have left the cult and they're, oh, no, those are the weird ones. Those are the outliers, right? So you leave it. So you're like, okay, well, I don't want to leave the cult, right? So we've got this cult mentality. So you and I grew up going to these conveyor belt schools that then convinced us that we weren't capable of educating our own kids, so we needed to send them back into that same system that left us feeling incapable to educate our own kids.
Yes.
Right? So we perpetuate.
Yes.
We perpetuate the cycle.
Oh my God.
And it's just like what a religious cult would do. And so if you stop to think about it, most people don't ever stop to think about it, you would ask the question, well, what is school for?
Yeah.
Right. And if you do that, you start to go, okay, well, then, and who decided that it would look the way it does?
Yes.
And we have this weird kind of esoteric concept. I'm sure there were these experts. They were out there somewhere and they went, this is what it needs to look like. Well, yeah, there were experts.
Yeah.
But they were experts in how to break a human. They were experts in how to break down the spirit. They were experts in how to make sure you never realized your full potential. You were not a sovereign individual. You were dependent upon systems. You were dependent upon whoever claimed authority the loudest.
Yeah.
That's why it was developed the way it was. And once you go down that rabbit hole, you go, holy shit, what are we doing?
It's scary.
It is scary.
I can remember vividly at times feeling like I didn't belong because I couldn't, like, it didn't. School to me was an opportunity to rebel. I just did not like anything about school for me, myself, when I was a child. And I struggled to try to figure out how I could do well in school. And when I try to look back and like, what in my life, what did I value from school? And about the only thing that I could say really helped me in life was I was positioned to do a lot of my own problem solving, which in life is probably one of the most important things that you can develop is figure out how to solve problems.
You bet.
And so like I struggle to figure out like how is today's school or educational system really helping children to problem solve? Like, where is that? At what point do they introduce that into the system?
That's right.
Never.
Zero.
Because they want the conformity. They don't want you to think on your own or have the ability to, like, and what bothers me is the being able to be, like I tell my students in my profession, the two most valuable skills that you bring to my class are an insatiable curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to be creative, which in a sense is problem solving.
Yep.
And those are what I learned the hard way.
Yes.
So.
And what can you imagine if we would made those the focus of what we're doing, what we would unleash? Well, the problem is you would unleash a society that would actually be capable of civil discourse. They'd be able to think for themselves. They would have some resilience. They would have some self-confidence because they'd actually done some things.
Oh,
they would have self-awareness, right? Because they would understand a little bit about who they are and what they liked and what they didn't like. They would have all of those things. And a capable society is not a society that is going to be easily controlled.
That's so true.
Right?
That's 100%. When people, like, we can certainly point the finger at some of the problems that we have today, where we see young adults that have no social skills or problem-solving skills or the ability to think for themselves or think outside of the box. And what are they left to do? Conform and follow the
that's right.
Follow the norm or follow the path that they have been laid in front or that has been laid in front of them. And that's scary because they feel so committed. You see these folks that are just so committed to it, and partly because it's so scary to think that there's something outside of that.
There is. Well, and a lot of people don't even realize there is something outside of that.
Yeah, or to acknowledge it means that everything that they've done
has been a lie. And
exactly.
That's it, has been a lie.
Yes.
And that, so I always, when I get to get the honor of talking to people like you and we start diving into the system, one of the things I always want to make abundantly clear, and it still doesn't actually get absorbed by people who are in this profession, is look, if you are a good human being, who is a teacher, who is an administrator, I'm on your team. You're a good person who wants to do the right thing by these young people.
Yeah.
Dude, we're on the same team.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not speaking out against you as a human.
Yeah.
I'm speaking out against the system.
Right.
And you've been, by the way, trained by the system to perpetuate the system.
Man.
And so you and I are going to disagree on the system. We're not disagreeing on what we want for the young people. So we can still be friends.
Yeah.
But there's a reason You don't go into the history of why we do the conveyor belt style of school. You don't go into that. I've got a teaching credential. You don't learn that. You don't learn real child development. You don't learn how to set up. You learn how to perpetuate the system. You know, and so again, it's a hard pill for people to swallow because people have spent 20, 30 years and they have made an impact because they've developed some relationships, but they don't want to hear, wait a second, I was potentially actually doing more harm than good.
Yeah.
Of course nobody wants that, you know.
Of course not.
Nobody wants to swallow that pill.
No. I was just doing what I was told.
It's
another fond comment.
Oh.
So let's go back to childhood. What was a hard part in your childhood that kind of helped pave the way? Was there something?
Yeah, you know, my dad, and I love my dad. I want nothing bad for my dad. My dad was really the hardest part of childhood. And so he was a rough dude. He was a corrections officer, and so, you know, but he and his buddies, you know, it's like questions: should they have worked there? Should they have lived there? You know, it was like kind of that whole situation.
Tight rope.
And so as I've grown to be a man, though, and a father, and understanding, you know, just kind of a little more of the ways of the world and earning some of the whiteness in my beard, right?
Right.
He was just battling his own demons, right?
For sure.
I've got nothing again. He had it rough and he didn't know what he was doing. So he was a rough part of growing up. We did not have a good relationship. There was some, you know, some sort of some abusive kind of things that were going on in there.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I didn't have a lot of hardship. Mm. I really didn't.
Mm.
You know, I grew up in a decent. Now I had friends that we were in an interesting environment where I had friends that were in gangs, and I had friends that, you know, their parents were multimillionaires who owned half of the city, and we just had that kind of unique sort of deal. You know,
the first time
I had a friend go to jail for murder, we were 13. You know, like so we had some of those, and I got along with everybody because again, I figured out the game of people.
Yes.
Okay, how do I appease the teacher? How do I get along with this guy? How do I get along with this guy, right? So I could navigate that.
Yes.
The one guy I had a hard time getting along with, I could obey him, but again, it was my dad.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was the hardest thing. But even that, gosh, man, I almost wish I had more hardship, you know? So luckily I got hardship through sports and through kickboxing and through, you know, all the other things
that life throws at us.
Man, I didn't have hardship until later.
Well, you know, I feel like I had a very similar kind of upbringing as well. I didn't really, my hardship came once I left the home.
Right.
In a sense.
Me too.
You know, and so I feel very similar in that sense. And I had, you know, I had a wonderful upbringing of nothing bad per se, you know, I got in trouble, but not that.
Nothing crazy.
Nothing bad.
Yeah.
Nothing bad.
Yep.
But like you said, I wish I'd had some hardship.
Yeah.
Like I can remember like playing sports and wanting to find some sort of area of conflict so that I could appreciate that conflict.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, that kind of.
And it's so necessary, right?
Yes.
So again, if you go back to what should school be for, man, what if we were giving young people the opportunity to have some hardship there when the stakes aren't high? They're still going home to mom and dad, right? They're not going to, the hardship itself, if they fail, is not going to result in the end of a marriage or, you know, it's not going to result in I can't pay my mortgage. And
right.
It's not going to result in now I lose my job and my livelihood, right? It's not going to result in those things. So what if we build that you know, resilience through some hard failures early, so that we have less of a chance to have that. Because I'm like you, man. I lived in a Toyota, took a little Toyota Tercel at 22 years old.
Wow.
Right. So like that was harder.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm very grateful for that too. But like that was hard. I wish I had learned some more hardship early on.
Yes.
And school is part of the reason that we stop applauding failure. And I always ask parents right? So you have kids.
Yeah.
So they learn to walk, right?
Yeah.
As they're learning to walk, what happens? They push themselves up on the couch and they start shuffling along and you're like, oh, okay, here we go. And then they turn and they start taking steps. And the first time they ever do that, what happens? They fall on their ass. So what happened? They just failed at walking. You as the parent go, yes, and you applaud and you cheer and they go, oh, okay, all right, I'm on the right path.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get back up and I'm going to try again. And they fail and you cheer.
Cheer.
Right? So you're cheering them through that because you know that that is all it takes. One more failure means one more step towards success. You cheer
that.
It on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go to school and
it's
you
just
go,
the opposite.
Don't fail.
Yeah.
Man. Don't fail. And so they start to go, wait, what? Don't fail. And so it's not an accident that kids go into school at 5 and they test off the charts, almost all of them on any level of being a genius. Because, hey, by the way, genius is just kind of the inherent nature of a human being. We're born that way.
I love hearing that.
We just are.
Hear that, people? I'm a genius.
You are a genius. But you get it schooled out of you by about the time you're about 8 or 9 years old.
Yeah.
Then you start to acquiesce. Then you start to just put that away.
Yes.
Right?
And you start to conform.
You start to conform.
Yeah.
And the parents are complicit in it.
Yeah. But here's another interesting question I have for you. Is it complicit or is it lack of awareness?
It's usually that. Right? It's usually that. They don't understand.
Yeah. I mean,
they don't know.
And so, like, when we had to try to penetrate the bureaucracy of the school, I felt like I had to do so much research.
Yep.
I had to be so well informed and armed with information to come and literally it was like, I'm going to court. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to, like, it's a court proceeding almost just to try to get simple answers about, what are you doing?
That's right.
And why aren't you doing, or what can you do? And it was such a...
It's a nightmare.
It was.
Yeah, it ends up being a nightmare.
Absolute frustration to the point where I can say that after a while, we just stopped going to the school.
Mm-hmm.
We stopped going to the school to try to see what they could do to help us or do what we thought they should do.
Mm-hmm.
We just stopped.
Yep. It's not going to happen.
Yep.
Yep. And that's where most parents get, right? They either go, look, you know what? I went through something like this because it looks the same to me. So, and I turned out fine, right? And that's, I get that
I don't
all the
want
time.
Fine.
Fine sucks.
Yes. I don't want fine.
Fine sucks. How's your relationship with your wife? It's fine. Oh, that sounds good. Awesome. How's
she's
your relationship
gonna love
with your
kids?
Yeah, she's going to love that, right? Relationship with my kids? That's fine.
Yeah.
That's shitty.
I don't
Nobody
want
wants
that.
Fine.
No.
I want freaking fantastic.
Oh,
I want
God,
stellar. I want
you,
the journey. I want
you.
The adventure, right? I want that hero's
yes.
journey. I want. That's what I want.
Yes.
I don't want fine. And did you turn out fine because of school or did you turn out fine in spite of? Right? Because
yeah.
what if
yes.
what if that whole upbringing was built upon making you go out there and figure out what is that genius that's inside of me? We're not going to take that out.
Yeah.
We're gonna like just exponentially increase that so you can go out there and freaking tear shit up.
So you had mentioned something a little earlier about how, you know, school is for the large part creates an aversion to failure.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're for one reason or another, what would it look like to encourage failure in school? What would that look like?
That's a really good question. So I will tell you how we have done that.
Yes, please.
We have encouraged failure. So we do it on small scale things and then a little bit of a macro scale. So from an individual standpoint, the way we are developing schools is we are developing them as each young hero is going to individualize his or her academic journey and academic goals.
Okay.
Right. So I'm setting daily or weekly goals, depending on how old I am, based on what the family thinks I should be doing and how I should be tackling that, right?
Yes.
And then we are going to go ahead and have external rewards. So we're going to have things on like Friday. We're going to have, you know, whatever happened. You're going to have this open time, free time, or you're going to have somebody that's coming in and we're going to do jujitsu on Friday, or we're going to do, you know,
that.
Whatever, right?
Yeah.
You've got all this that's here, but you've got to nail your goals throughout the week, right? And if they don't hit their goals, okay, well, the downside is they don't get to go, right? And that's okay. And we want to keep stretching those goals so that every week they're like, oh, I really want to get to that thing.
Yeah.
And it is possible that I don't hit that. And we don't want the downside to be something that crushes them. We want the downside to just encourage them to get better. It's okay. We actually want them to stretch so hard that occasionally they don't hit it.
Yes.
Right? Because there's a level of self-awareness that comes in too on setting, okay, what's realistic for me for the week too? So you start to get that self-awareness there. But then we also want them collaborating on big projects and we're going to give them some high stakes environment at the end. So what we'll do is we'll say, okay, Matt and Jeff, you guys are a team and we're going to add Tim and you know, we're going to add, so we have three or four of you guys and your project here, we got 6 weeks. And at the end of 6 weeks, you guys are going to have to develop, we're going to give you kind of the macro. You're going to develop a city. You have to build part of that hammer and nails. You got to build part of it by a 3D printer. And you got to build part of it out of Legos. You have to link it all together, but you actually have to run lights to it. And we have to have, you know, there's got to be 50 working lights. You got to run electricity to it and figure out how to do that. But we're not going to flip the switch until we have all the parents in the community there 6 weeks from now at a grand exhibition. So we're going to put some high stakes there. We don't care if they flip the switch and it doesn't work. That's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is there's some high stakes. You're going to try to get this together. You're going to figure out all of the intricate parts by doing all of this. And then when you're done, Did it work? Did it not work? Let's reflect. Let's talk. God. Let's talk about the failure that happened. What parts were harder? What parts did we fail in communication? So that we can make it better next time. That's what failure's for, right?
God, I love hearing this, man.
That's what it's for. So that's how we're building things out. It's not some arbitrary carrot. You know, you obey this way, we'll give you an A on this. Regurgitate the right. That's bullshit. It doesn't do anything for anybody.
Okay. First of all, I have so much love for everything that you just said. Because the what I think people lose sight of is that failure is a gift, mm-hmm. if it's used correctly.
Correct.
And so what I in our schooling, I try to encourage adults mm-hmm. to not only fail but fail often. And then take those failures and what did you learn from those failures? Bingo. Like to really try to isolate what did you do right, what did you do wrong, what did you learn?
Mm-hmm.
And so to hear you explain how our children should be doing that.
That's it.
Like, that, I love that.
That's called, that's failing forward.
Yes.
Right? That's failing forward.
Because
you're getting closer to it's that reflection piece that you just laid out there where it's like, okay, so how am I going to change that next time? And then taking the action to make that step. And still might fail at the overall outcome, but you got a little bit closer.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Now I'm going to regroup and go, okay, what got me closer? Why didn't I still hit the mark? Cool. Let's go again. I'm going to get a little closer, right?
I love that.
And you can use all kinds. I mean, the child learning to walk is an analogy. You can use, you know, I played basketball in high school too, and I didn't go out there and just you learn how to shoot right away. No, you suck, right?
Yeah.
And you miss, and you got to calibrate, and then you change your form, and you miss over and over and over and over until finally you make it, and you're like, okay, cool. I'm going to try to repeat that.
Yes.
And I'm going to try to hone that, and I'm going to try to perfect that. That is literally a metaphor for everything.
Yeah.
We just get told, oh, shit, you missed. Better stop.
Yeah. But, you know, something else that I loved about what you said is how, you know, the kids are advocating for their own education.
Mm-hmm.
They sit out and they try to set their weak goals.
Yep.
They are setting their weak goals.
Yes.
And then when they don't make those weak goals,
yep.
they learn
That's right.
from that.
Bingo.
And then the next week they refine that.
And they adjust.
And so the goal setting that you are in, you're basically creating an instinct to goal set mm-hmm. at such a young age,
Bingo.
Which is huge.
Yeah,
I mean, that drive from the very beginning of childhood all the way through adult life.
You're creating habits.
Yes.
Right? That's what we're doing.
I love
that. You're creating
that.
Habits.
Yes.
So part of it there, all education is self-education. I always tell people that. All education is self-education. Mm. I can't teach Jeff Gonzalez anything.
Mm.
I can teach you nothing.
Mm.
I can tell you things. I can tell you stories. I can show you things. I can go through an experience with you. But if Jeff is hell bent on not getting anything from that experience, I can't change that. I can't teach you.
Uh-huh.
All I can do is be a mentor, a guide, be somebody on the side, be somebody who is in your corner, right? And then I hope that as I'm walking through and we're reflecting together that you take those lessons away, right? So at the end of the day, you have to decide that you want to be educated. And that's just inherent in human nature. So all education is self-education. So getting those habits ingrained early of what does education look like and what are my habits? My habits are, I'm going to be very disciplined. I'm going to set myself, you know, high goals. I'm going to always be attacking a purpose. I'm going to be very specific and organized with my time so that I am going after something. I'm going to tackle books. I'm going to reflect. I'm going to create relationships. I'm going to all the things that we know really means you become a well-rounded, an educated individual. Make it a habit. What does school make a habit? It's the habit of raise my hand and ask the authority. It's my habit of stay in line. It's the habit of don't talk unless I'm spoken to. It's the habit of I've got to conform. It's the habit of I've got to only talk to the people that are my exact same age. And if somebody's younger than me, I get to look down on them. If somebody's older, I have to revere them, right? The only place that transfers over as a system is in prison. That's it. That's not valued. That level of conformity. We are teaching them like this is how you operate.
This is how you survive in the yard.
Right. That's how you stay in the yard, man. This is how you survive. You know, you got your homies here. You got your race. You stay with your color, right? You're gonna go shower when you're told to shower. You're gonna eat the same kind of food. You're gonna stay in the straight line.
I never looked at it that way,
dude. It's the only system that matches that closely.
That's scary.
It is scary.
That's so scary. But it's also, it's real. You know, when I look at things, when I look at the school system now with the different viewpoints that mm-hmm. I have, having suffered through it, and I say mm-hmm. suffered because as a parent, I felt like I could not help my children.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was powerless to try. It was like always out of reach. just always out of my reach to try to help them. And what mm-hmm. we did at home was valuable, but didn't reflect well in school.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, if you don't know how to play the game,
yep.
you're always going to be either you're not going to finish, or you're not going to do well. You're not going to receive the praise or right. the accolades that you need.
Right.
What I'm most upset about is the, you know, like eventually we just let the kids fend for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we said, okay, you are on your own.
Yeah.
The school system is really not going to help you, and we can't figure out how to get the school system to help you.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your own. And I hated that. I mean, it was just like, just even talking about it just is so visceral for me.
But again, first of all, you didn't know what you didn't know.
Yeah.
And true. Second of all, you guys were still doing your best job at home. Parents always say, well, I'm not a teacher. Bullshit. You are the number one educator in their life,
right.
period. End of story.
Yeah.
Right. No matter what, doesn't matter if they're going to their number. So you guys leading by example at home is their education.
Yeah.
Right. And then they're also, by the way, having to learn how to play school. Right.
Yeah.
So that's,
play school,
that's
I like that.
Right, that's what it is. So you got to figure out one of those. But you were always educating them from the get go. And what's liberating when you understand the totality of this game is that you now understand that you have options. And people go, well, I can't afford to go private. I can't afford to homeschool.
Yeah.
I can't. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Then I get that, man. Yeah. That's great. But what you can do now is be intentional on conversations around, okay, look, you're playing this game. Here's how we're going to play this game, but here's what you can focus on while you're there so that you actually get something out of it. And then when you're home, we're going to do our education here, and this is what education is going to look like. And you can become the one that's going to inspire them, right? Or if you have the ability to pull out of there, you can opt out of that game.
Yes.
Play a different game.
Yeah.
People don't realize that that is an option.
What do you mean by that, really, though? What does that mean?
Don't go to school.
Okay. And so, like, maybe pushing more towards trade schools, or?
That's one thing. So there's a million ways to play this life game. And when I say this, I always like to give caveats on this, too, because there are certain families, if you're a shitty parent, you should not be homeschooling.
Okay. 100%.
If you suck as a parent, right, and you're just a shitty.
You're only going to make it worse.
You suck as a human being. Right? It is very possible that these adults that your child is seeing at school are the best adults they're ever going to see. Right? So there are certain people that should not be. And so I never want, you know, public school to go, I don't want it to go away, because there is a population that needs good humans there.
Okay.
Right?
I'm down with that.
So, but if you're a good human being, you're purpose driven, you are, you know, going after goals, you treat people well, you've got character, you got values. If you can make it work, you don't have to play the school game at all. You can home educate, which, by the way, doesn't mean you recreate school at home.
Mm.
It means you dive into real education at home. What do we want to read? What do we want to tackle? What projects do we want to do? Do we want to start a business right now? Like, well, you're literally walking through life together, which, by the way, that's how humanity has always done it outside of these last 150 years.
Wow.
The only reason it sounds weird to us is because we're not over
150
years
old.
Bingo.
Oh, my God.
How it's always been.
Yes.
So you can do that now.
I love hearing that because one of the options, my older son was out of the system at some point, and my younger son we were still struggling with. And we finally decided the last year, his senior year, to pull him out and to try to homeschool.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to play the homeschool game was like, whoa, I feel like they make it so hard to do homeschooling that you have no choice but to then introduce them back into the school system.
And that's kind of the thing. So the trick is you don't recreate school at home.
Man.
You don't recreate school at home.
I wish, yes. Right? I mean, I could
that's
totally.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
If we try to go back, that's the cult mentality.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I'm kind of leaving the cult, but I'm also going to do what the cult does here at home without the oversight of the cult. That's how deeply ingrained it is. Right.
Yes.
And so we help people. We get, you know, I build schools that look different, but I also help families who are like, okay, look, you know, we're not near your school. We're not near Tim's school. We're not near you know, any of these. So we're going to homeschool, but we don't know what that. I'm like, okay, no, you're going to home educate. I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you do that too.
See, I
so
love
we help
that.
People to figure out what that looks like too. And then once it clicks for these families too, once they see, wait a second, this is what it can look like. I can just do life with my kids and we're all moving forward, you know, and all these things together. And wait, I didn't actually have to teach them how to read, and all of a sudden they know how to read? How is that possible? I'm like, well, did you bring a tutor in and send them to school to learn how to walk?
Wow. Yeah.
They just learn how to do it. By the way, if reading and book, you know, that's just a part of what's going on. Mom and dad are reading. They're going to learn to read, and they don't need direct instruction. We don't get shown those things because then it shows the system to be irrelevant like it is.
Yes.
Right? So we're helping families walk through that as well. So you can literally just opt out. Now, what you said too is like, okay, well, does that mean you go more towards trades? It means you have the opportunity at that point to go towards whatever you want.
I like that.
One of the easiest ways to get now college is something that I think is more and more becoming something that is, it's actually a net negative for more people. And that comes from somebody with graduate degrees and I worked at Stanford. Right?
Yeah,
get the game.
Yeah.
But that's becoming more irrelevant for more and more people. And it's actually becoming a net negative for a lot of people too. But that said, one of the easiest ways to get into college is to not have a high school diploma at all.
Really?
So this is what I'm saying. When people
don't get
this game, right? You don't get that game. So you can drop out.
Yeah.
You drop out. You go to a JC. You don't need a high school diploma to go to junior college. You go to a JC. You take a couple years of playing that game. And then you transfer in as an adult transfer student that's usually more highly weighted than if you had played all of these years of a game and gotten yourself a 4.3 GPA.
Oh, my God.
Ding.
Boom. Right?
So that's what I'm saying is there's a million ways. So college is still an option. When you home educate, college is still an option.
Yeah.
I would just say, make sure you're going for a reason, right? But college is an option. Trade schools are an option.
Yeah.
You've got the option to just start working. You've got option to start a business and, and start now. There's great
now,
programs
yeah.
like there's programs like Praxis where you can go in and do kind of an internship or apprenticeship that's a paid thing that usually rolls right into a full-time position. You come out debt-free within a year versus shit ton of debt with 4 or 5 years.
Oh, my God.
Right? So the opportunity cost isn't lost, and you're rolling right into a full-time paid gig. There's a million ways to play it.
I like that. It's interesting because, you know, when we decided to do the homeschooling, it was super frustrating. I only saw it from afar because it was my ex-wife took the responsibility of doing all of the homeschooling, and she eventually got to the point where it's like,
I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what
yeah.
ended up happening was he just went and got his GED. And then he started going to junior college and he's, you know, then the pandemic happened and that put everybody on a back burner for some of us, it put him on a back burner. And then he's starting to get back into school. So I guess in some roundabout way, we did kind of follow that process without knowing. We just felt like we don't have, like, because in our heads we're thinking, oh, we got to play the game.
You have to play this
we
game.
We have to play the
there's
game.
There's certain boxes
right.
we have to check.
Yes, exactly. And we're like, we're doing... That's the hard part for parents to realize is that there isn't.
Yes.
There's a perception.
Yes.
But in reality, now that I'm through that and I can look back at it and say, because I can remember, my God, my son's not going to graduate high school.
Because you're told that means
exactly.
he's going to be a bum. He's
exactly.
not going to have it, right?
Or he's going to be looked down upon by society, you know, whatever that means.
Right. So I've got a chance to interview, you know, on the podcast, I've had 150, 160 guests so far, right? And I'll have, you know, some pretty high level entrepreneurs and CEOs, you know, and Gary Vaynerchuk and Patrick Bet-David and Jeff Hoffman. And I mean, I've had some phenomenal humans, and I ask every single person who is on there, all right, hey, if you are hiring a young person right now, what is it that you want to see from that young person, right? What do you want to see that would make you go, okay, I'm going to take a chance on this young person.
Yes.
Not a single one of them mentions a high school diploma or a degree.
Interesting.
In 160 plus episodes, nobody mentioned that.
Wow.
And in fact, if I explicitly bring up what about these things, they go, that's usually a red flag for us.
No shit.
Because we've had so much. So as I've been building out these schools, and some people know this, some people don't, but as I was building out the schools, I traveled and was a keynote speaker for many years, right?
Yeah.
So I'm working with these top organizations all over the planet. And Amazon, Google, Netflix, Microsoft, American Eagle, Lockheed Martin, U.S. Air Force, Wendy's. I mean, these are all clients of mine, right? And I'm coming in because they're saying, look, we're hiring all these kids out of college. They suck. We want to fire them all. Like, what can we do? Like, what can we do? Because all they know how to do is play school. They play school. That's it.
Yes.
So help them not play school. Help us understand how do we lead them. Help us understand how to find some really good ones. Help us. So those are the conversations I'm going in and helping, everybody to go with. Yes, because we're thinking, I got to check all these boxes. And it turns out that that's what we're creating right there. So, the beauty is you don't have to check any of those boxes.
Love that.
Do you know, so you had Ray in here, right?
Yeah.
Who's a mutual friend of ours. Do you know Steve Eckert, who also works with Ray at the project.
I know
Squire.
Of him. Okay. I haven't had him on. I haven't had him on yet.
Steve's stellar human. Great guy. I went down and was with those guys for the project early in November.
Nice.
It was for Squire program.
Okay.
Early in November, and so we're all hanging out and we're talking, and Steve's in California, and he's like, you know what, man, I'm gonna pull my kids out, you know, and I think we're gonna homeschool. I'm like, all right, sweet, man, awesome. He's like, you know, I know you help people through that, and so can we link up? I'm like, yeah, that's awesome, man. It would be a pleasure, be an honor. Bring your family over. I'll help you guys, you know, figure out what that looks like. He's like, all right, cool. But as we're doing it, like, who do we report to? Like, who do we need? I'm like, you don't report to anybody. He's like, no, okay, but when I pull my kids out and they're doing certain things, who do I report to? Like, who do I? Steve. Nobody. And he's like, God, I'm extra. And if you know anything about Steve, yeah, he very much is. He's very freedom minded.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
very like,
yeah, yeah.
let's go get it. Let's optimize.
Yeah.
Let's crush.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's, and he said, we were at dinner and he's like, God, even I'm like going, shit, you got to have some sort of box you're supposed to check, right?
Yes.
And I'm like, no, you check your box.
Oh, see.
What do you want their life to look like? What do they want their life to look like? What problems do they want to solve now? Who do they want to be now? How do we want them to grow?
Yeah.
Like, you decide.
It's so refreshing in so many ways. And I know that you've been doing this for a while, but it's refreshing for me to hear that there are options
mm-hmm.
for everyone.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, regardless of your social, economical
yes, sir.
Class, there are options for everyone. And I think that the hard part is just getting past the block that Steve had.
Yes.
Like, that, in my opinion, was my biggest
right.
obstacle. Was like, man, I just don't know if this is the right thing, because, you know, society is gonna look down upon him and all this
right.
other business. But that's, and then to hear it from these Fortune 500 mega minds that, hey, yeah, we really don't want that class. And when I'm looking at hiring an instructor, the mm-hmm. first thing that I'm looking for is how well can they solve problems?
Bingo.
And how creative are they at solving
That's
those problems?
That's right. And where's the evidence of that, right? That
There's none.
Right.
I have to sit there
That's
and give
right.
them puzzles.
And try to figure – exactly. So what if we took our – so like what Tim and I do with the Apogee Strong Young Men,
yeah.
right, is they're taking on projects and challenges
yes.
that are real education. Now, whether they're in school, whether they're homeschooled, whether they're – part-time, we have, you know, young men in all different avenues, but what we're doing is we're having them take on real projects, real challenges, real readings, meeting with real mentors, taking on real workouts, and then they're putting together a digital portfolio that is a portfolio of evidence showing this journey, this leadership journey, this their ability to learn to solve problems, their ability to do hard things, their, you know, their intentionality, their all of these things, so that then they can go to wherever. If they want to go apply to college, they want to go apply for a job, they want to, they say, Mr. Gonzalez, yep, you know, I'd love to work for you. Here's why. Here are the core
yes.
values. Here's where we match up values
yes.
wise. It's because, you know, as an employer, if somebody doesn't match up values wise, well, everybody's going to be shit out of luck. It's
yep.
not going to be a good thing.
It's a crapshoot.
Right? So they go, Mr. Gonzalez, we're aligned here, here, here. But here's also my evidence of why I am the right person. Look how I solve these problems here. Here's all the evidence. Here's the videos around this. Here are the interviews I did with, you know, this guy, this guy, this guy. Here's my letters of reference because I worked in an apprenticeship for, you know, these people that I know, you know. Like, when they do that,
yeah.
it's a freaking no-brainer.
It is. Absolutely.
It's
I
a
mean,
no-brainer.
You, I mean, the caliber that you're going to get is, I mean, you know, like, as somebody that has to look at hiring characteristics, like, what am I
yes,
looking
sir.
For?
Yes, sir.
Without a doubt, top of the list is going to be those simple the things that are not taught in school.
That's correct, sir.
Which I kind of feel bad about, because I can remember, I would have some great guys that would come through. They're stellar individuals,
yeah,
but they lack that problem solving capability. You know, I'm going to have a variety of students come at them,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to have unique. Everything from physical disabilities
mm-hmm.
to emotional trauma to some sort of obstacle that's self-imposed,
mm.
and they've got to figure out how mm. to work around that. And I can't
that's
I
right.
can't often trust a lot of these guys to be able to do that, because they
right.
just really haven't been able to demonstrate to me that they can do that, because
that's
there's
right.
nothing there.
There's nothing
there's,
there
there's
to
no,
show
yes.
that. That's
yes.
it. You know, it's you know, from a from a hiring standpoint, I've been guilty of this too, where you're like, you look through, you know, I got 100 resumes all of a sudden on my desk and I'm like, shit, okay. So what is going to be my filtering mechanism?
Yes.
So I go through 100, right? And so that's what the degree is turning out to be for a lot of people is like, okay, well, let's just do it by, so a lot of these companies that I work with, they'll post jobs and the jobs will say degree required.
Yeah.
But when I talk to them, they go, look, man, if we knew they aligned with company culture, and they could show us that they've got this skill set, we don't give a shit about the degree. That's a way for us to filter.
Yeah.
Right. And there's so many organizations and leaders that are operating from that exact same mentality, man.
So that's valuable information to share with the public. That if you are a go-getter that has that capacity to be creative and curious, don't turn down, don't look away from an opportunity like that.
That's
Find a way to get to that right person who might then take a second look at your project or whatever it is that you're presenting.
Bingo.
That's huge because I think a lot of people will struggle with that. A lot of people will see that there's a requirement for some sort of 4-year degree.
And count themselves out.
Exactly.
Automatically.
Automatically.
You are correct, sir.
So that like, everybody watching, do not take that as a final no-go. Figure out a way to get around that. Because if I put that as a barrier and somebody figured out a way to get around that barrier, that right there.
Oh, how much does that get you excited?
Exactly. Exactly. That's my point. It's like they figured out something and they put it in front of me and I'm like, okay.
Ooh, I like
this. Let's talk. Exactly.
Yes, it gives you a heads up.
It does.
100%. 100%. And here's the other hack too for people that are listening. If you're raising your young person to be that person earlier, it is far more attractive to get this kind of thing from somebody reaches out to you and goes, Jeff, shoots you an email and goes, Jeff, you are a hero of mine. Here's why. I know your background in the teams. I know what you're doing, right? And start listing things out, but you have this specific, you know, whatever. They've gone in enough to show that they know some specific things about you and all this. So I would love to come work with you. Don't need any money, or I would love to come at least get 10 minutes of your time to get some advice. Here's a little bit about me. Here's a digital portfolio of all these things I've done. And they're like 15. You're like, holy shit.
Absolutely.
I do that. And you're like, this dude's 43 and he's got nothing else going. Like, man, I'm good. I don't know why. It's just a different deal. Take advantage of that when you are young.
Yeah.
We've had so many young people who have then parlayed that into a full-time apprenticeship, parlayed that into full-time jobs, parlayed that into career-level positions at 18 because they developed a relationship like that on.
Yeah. It's funny, too, because that is a lot of what we're talking about also is like it's self-confidence for one, but it's also teaching – it's also teaching initiative.
Yes, sir.
And one of the things, it's funny too that we're talking about this because Tim posted this up on his feed maybe 2 or 3 days ago, the message to Garcia, which is my all-time favorite.
Oh, awesome.
I was a little, Tim, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I was a little ticked at him because he shared that. He kind of like, he like presented it to the public of sorts. And it's always been like, folks that have read that or know of that or understand that, they get it.
Yes.
Because they had to find it to get it.
That's right.
That initiative is something that I'll take that initiative.
Yes, sir.
I'll take that initiative because that's what we need both as a society, but also as parents.
Yes, sir.
Initiative for your children. Be the ones, like you said something that just was amazing. Like you had talked about how you know, how many parents are willing to die for their children?
Mm.
And everybody would raise their hand, no question about it. But how many parents are willing to live every day for their children?
Much harder.
It is so much harder. And like being a parent that takes the initiative and sets the example for their children to also do the same thing.
Bingo.
I mean,
bingo.
Oh, gosh.
They will do what you do before they do what you say.
Yeah.
So if you're saying, oh, you can do it, you can do it. But then they watch you complain about your life, your health, your fitness, your job, your money situation, your relationship. They don't believe you.
Yeah, it's so
because
true.
Because you're not living by example.
They're not as dumb as we want them to be.
They're way smarter than we. That's absolutely right. So they see that disconnect, right?
Yeah.
And you mentioned self-confidence. And what a lot of people mistake is they say, okay, well, I just have to get my kid more self-confident. And then he'll take initiative. And I go, no. You take initiative first. That's where the confidence is built.
Yes.
Initiative first. I tell the 100%. Young, you know, we tell the young men, and Message to Garcia is part of our required reading for Apogee Strong too. So yeah, for sure. But you know, we tell them we're not ready, aim, fire. We are fire, aim, ready for you guys right now. We want you to go take action first.
Yeah.
And then you're going to start to aim because you're going to take action and you're going to see what you did right. You're going to see what you did wrong.
Yes.
And that allows you to focus. And then you're going to do that again, right? And then eventually you'll get to the point where you're quote unquote ready. And that just means you understand that there's bigger things I need to now fire at and repeat the cycle.
Yeah. So, I love that.
Yeah.
So let's go back to like when you kind of like unplugged from the system. Mm. What was the hardest part about doing it on your own, going at it, El Lobo solo kind of thing.
Everybody gets pissed at you.
Yeah. I was going to say.
It's just a relationship.
Because you're
the crazy guy.
You're threatening the status quo.
That's right. And you're the crazy person.
You're
saying, I'm a bad person. No, I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm saying this system is not okay.
Yeah.
Well, then you're saying I'm a bad person. Nope. So it's those relationships, right? So you're having to, a lot of relationships are becoming severed. But then as you're wanting to, we've got rules in our, we had 11 rules that hang up in our house. And one of our rules is no complaining, fix it. So if it's worth making a comment about, then it's worth finding a solution for.
I love that.
Right? So the initial part, the hard part is that those relationships, start to sever and you get people that are pissed at you. But then the hard part later is you're building something that is so antithetical to the cult that everybody has grown up in.
Yes.
And so I'm just going, hey, over here, over here. They're like, what's your cult? And I'm like, no, freedom. You're in the cult. Freedom over here. Freedom over here. And they're like, you cult member. I'm like, nope. So it's that, right? Like trying to get people to shift that mindset. And so that's something that I still get to, it's something I still work on with parents and young people all over the world is shifting that mindset.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I always tell people the public schools will always be my biggest ally because they're going to push more and more people out all the time. They're always going to fuck it up.
It's true.
All the time. So I don't ever have to worry about that. Like, they're always going to help.
Yeah.
And then I can be like, told you.
Yeah.
Now come on over here.
Oh, I love hearing that. That's so funny. They're your best salesperson. Yeah.
By far.
Yeah.
We got over 5 million people homeschooling just in America right now, which is, we've never had that level.
5 million?
5 million.
Wow.
Over 5 million. We've never had that many. 3 years ago, we were at the top we ever were, and it was like 2.5 million. It was the highest we'd ever been.
Wow.
And over the last 3 years, we doubled it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, first, that's a huge accomplishment.
That's a good day.
I know that the system fears change, or the fears anything that threatens their dominance.
Sure.
Because unfortunately, whether we like it or not, there's a substantial amount of money involved in public school systems.
Massive.
Yeah.
A lot of money, a lot of politics.
Right? Yes. But. And that drives, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, that does drive a lot of the decisions. And like what I look for in a school district these days is, do they openly encourage homeschooling? Because if they're like, yep, go for it. Here's how we suggest this. Here's some options. Here's some ideas. Mm-hmm. That tells me that they're comfortable in their own skin about what they're doing in their school.
Yeah.
And then that's like, okay, so maybe I do go down the homeschooling path. Maybe I don't. But my point is that they recognize that there are other options and they don't hold back.
Yeah.
They are free. They are encouraging that. And I do wish that more school districts did that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pipe dream.
It is a pipe dream.
It is a pipe dream.
They can't. They literally can't.
Because then they're sending their money.
They can't.
Their money makers away.
They'll be gone. So the unions are completely controlled. Teachers unions are completely controlled. And so a lot of these, I get messages from administrators, from teachers. I get messages all day long, every single day of people going, look, man, I agree. I get it. I know it. I see it. I see the game.
Yep.
But I can't do anything about it.
Politics.
Oh, but I can't. But it's all the politics, right? Oh, I will lose my job.
I've only got eight
more years, man. I just got to push out. But you're right.
Cooperate to graduate.
Exactly. And so they're acquiescing because of that. It's all day long, man.
It's all day long. That phrase just all of a sudden has a whole new meaning to me.
Yes, sir.
Cooperate to graduate.
Yes, sir.
We used to use that term all the time in the military,
but now
I look at it from the public school system and playing the game.
Playing the game.
Cooperate to graduate.
And it's a dangerous,
holy
that a dangerous
shit,
game.
That hurts my head right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah, it's wild, man.
It is.
You're right. It's not going to change. There's too much power that's up there. And Lord Acton said, power corrupts absolute power.
I love that.
Corrupt absolutely.
I love that
and
phrase.
That's what's happened. There's so much power that is there. There is no way they'll ever, relinquish that.
We see the same thing in a lot of other fields. It's no different.
You are correct.
Other than it's more hurtful because it's damaging our future.
Yes, sir.
Like the kids, kids of today or our leaders of tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
Which is why I also love how you use the term heroes to define mm-hmm. your students, right. as opposed to a student, they're heroes in yes, their sir. Own journey, which is so funny, not funny, I should say, but ironic, because I would always tell my sons that, you know, I use the kind of like a, you know, like a kingdom analogy mm-hmm. where, you know, mom and dad are king and queen, you're a little prince, mm-hmm. we're teaching you how to do this, but you're going to have to escape the kingdom and go out and, you know, fight your battles.
And then build your own kingdom.
And build your own kingdom. And, you know, at that point, I moved from a king more to a knight, mm-hmm. a guide, a, mm-hmm. You know yeah. somebody that helps yes. you. And the beautiful thing about that analogy was that, you know, I encourage them to, mm-hmm. you know, go yep. Get out there and try to figure this out on your own.
Yes, sir.
But I am here to answer whatever questions I can.
Exactly.
And, you know, this was late teens, yeah. late teen periods, because, you know, they're going to fly the coop at some point.
Yep.
And my best advice to them was, do everything that you think you should do right now.
Yes.
Don't put anything off.
That's
like,
right.
You know, like the one of my kids was like, well, you know, I'll get to that at some point. I'm like, man.
Dude, do it now.
Do it now.
By the way, that's good advice for anybody.
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is do the thing you need to do. Do it right now. That's good advice for everybody.
It's true.
The benefit for the young people is it's the compound interest effect, right? So if you're talking about from a financial standpoint, right? If you invest, you know, you and I start investing right now and we're putting in, you know, whatever, $100 yep. a month yep. right now. And by the time we're 65, it's X amount, right? Well, my 11-year-old or my 9-year-old or my 6-year-old starts doing the exact same thing by the time they're 65. I mean, it's an exponentially greater outcome, right?
Absolutely.
Everybody understands that yep. concept. Well, it's the same thing for that what you just said. If they start doing the things they want to do now, start being the people they want to be now, start yeah, yeah. solving the problems they want to solve now, the just those couple extra degrees
over time, such a difference.
It's a massive difference, and they're going to be heads and shoulders. Then they're really the leaders of tomorrow because they've taken the leadership path.
Quick word from our sponsor. We've been working with the folks at 1776 for comprehensive insurance of our firearms collections, and I'm really happy with how things are going so far. And one of my concerns is with the amount of commuting that I do with my firearms collection, what happens should my vehicle be broken into or stolen with my firearms? And there's reason to have this concern because there's 800,000 vehicles stolen per year in America. So it's not, you know, it's a little bit more common than what we might think. What I mentioned earlier is that they have a comprehensive insurance plan, which is that they will cover your firearms stolen out of your vehicle, or should your vehicle be stolen, cover the firearms that were in the vehicle. So that's pretty, you know, pretty reassuring in a sense. So I've mentioned this before, but the process to apply is pretty easy. Approval is pretty quick. They do not require you provide a itemization or serialized numbers. There's no appraisal or schedules that you have to provide. So really all you want to do is just make sure you have proof of ownership, and that's it. So if you want to learn more about the folks from 1776 and insuring your firearms collection, visit 1776insurance.com. You hear a lot of great leaders talk about leadership traits,
sure.
characteristics, if you will. And one of the things that I've always tried to pay attention to was where did those leadership traits first start to emulate? Mm. Like, where did they start to kind of like become part of their mm-hmm. their mm-hmm. persona, if you will?
Yeah.
Was that in their early adult life? Mm. Was that in their midlife? You know, but I don't often hear many of them talk about leadership from childhood.
That's right.
You know, and that's an interesting thing, because if we are looking to the kids to be future leaders,
yes.
why aren't we teaching them to be leaders at a young age?
Start it now.
The compound interest theory.
That's right.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you don't wait until you fix what Frederick Douglass said. It's easier to build strong men strong kids than it is to fix broken men. Right? You just start from the beginning, establishing the habits that are the right habits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it takes care of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
We're instead going, here, we're going to feed you a bunch of shitty habits. Like, that's like I tell, you know, parents, like, yeah, you could feed your kid McDonald's 3 times a day for 18 years.
Ooh.
And they're going to probably be alive.
Ooh.
They're not going to die,
yeah.
you know, and you might even call them fine at that point, right? Or you can feed them real, healthy, nutritious food. And what's the difference at 18?
Yeah.
Right? It's the same thing we're just talking about for the mind.
Oh, I love hearing that. That's a good analogy too. So let's talk about mistakes.
Yes, sir.
We've all made mistakes. From your experience, what are some of the mistakes that parents are making right now that with a little bit of insight can be significantly helpful in changing?
Oh, that's a really good question, man. That's a really good question. I think the first thing, because the first thing always when I work with parents, whether it's through parenting courses, whether it's home education, whether it's whatever that capacity is, the first thing I always get to is they're making a mistake by not leading by example, right? And it's something we've already 100% talked about. Like if you're not, again, that disconnect is there. If I am telling you one thing, but my life shows me going a complete different direction, I don't have the trust of that young person. They don't believe me. They don't believe that it's actually possible because, shit, Dad, that's great that you're saying that, but you're sure as hell not doing that, right? So that's the biggest, most prevalent mistake is that. And then it's, you know, there, we've got the school game, which is, I think, is a part of that. But there's all these cultural distractions, too. There's these opportunities for young people to be completely distracted versus taking on responsibility. So one of the things that I talk about with parents a lot is, look, the term teenager, that didn't exist until 1944.
Well, that's interesting.
It didn't even exist. It was, you're a young person and now you're an older person. Now you're an adult and you're going to take on adult shit. Like it was, right? So like that's why you had 12-year-olds that were, you know, leading men into war, commandeering a ship.
Yeah.
You had, you know, 14-year-olds who were working as surveyors, living on the land for by themselves for a week.
Yeah.
Right? You had, so did our DNA change that much? Were we incapable of that?
Good point.
It did not.
Yeah, good point.
We lowered the bar. We lowered the expectations. Right, we lowered the responsibilities for the adults first, and then correlated, you know, that to the young people.
Oh my God.
So we've lowered the bar. So when we're talking about the mistakes, part of the mistakes are not giving them enough responsibility early and often. We need to give them responsibilities, and we need to be very intentional about the distractions, because part of the thing with the distractions is that they're actually checking off our desire to be responsible. What I mean by that is, you know, especially for, so specifically for young men, we're born, man, with a DNA thread that means we, like, we've got that kind of hero blood in us. We want to go 100%. Slay that dragon, right?
Yeah.
We want the adventure, man.
Yeah,
we want to go
absolutely.
Save the princess. We want to go get
hell
in a fight.
Yeah.
Like, we've got that in us.
Absolutely.
Right? It's why young men will, you know, will grab sticks and they're turning to guns or weapons, right?
Yeah.
And we want to wrestle.
Yeah.
And we want to, that shit is ingrained
normal.
Into us,
yes.
Right? So we want that adventure. We want the responsibility that comes along with that. But parents are going, okay, nah, we're gonna dumb down the responsibility. We're not gonna make you do any kind of chores. We're not gonna let you. And they do it in the name of convenience, because you'll see a young kid be like, Dad, can I help? I want to help you with this.
Yeah.
And what do the parents do? They go, no, because it's gonna take me longer.
Guilty, right? Here.
Yep.
Did
and
that a lot.
Me too.
Yep.
By the way, I have absolutely done this, and I know all this shit, and I've done this too. So
no,
you know, there's no such thing as a perfect parent,
right? Yep.
But we should be striving to be.
Yes.
One. So, you know, we cut that off early.
Yeah.
And then we give them these distractions instead. And some of the most common distractions, especially now with our, you know, the phones or with the video games or whatever, they are such big releases of dopamine. That it replaces the actual adventure we want. We get that box checked over here in a virtual world.
Oh my God.
And so we get that checked and it makes the rest of the real stuff look less attractive. Why would I go out and tackle all of this when I can just do it here in the privacy of my own room?
Yep.
No real pressure because there's nobody around me.
Yep.
Right. So we're checking off that DNA box without actually having done something. And that's a huge area that parents can be very, very intentional about eliminating those distractions, giving them responsibilities, and it will change the trajectory of their young people.
So you said something, you used the term dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I have discovered is that my oldest son is well aware of dopamine.
Mm.
He knows almost, I would say he probably knows more about dopamine than I do because he knows how to try to get it.
Yeah.
He's constantly searching to try to get that dopamine hit, if you will. And he hasn't always had the most positive outlooks or, you know, directions, if you will.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to hear you say that because, you know, he's a little bit older, 23.
Yep.
But it would be nice to know that kids earlier than that understood that this is what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a chemical reaction in your body that you can actually feed.
Yes.
You can do it if you do it this way. So like having the responsibilities is going to feed this dopamine hit that you need.
That's right.
Talking to them in a sense like this is something obviously it was well beyond. We didn't know this until much later, but it's interesting to hear that because like I never really thought that dopamine would be something that we would talk about at the dinner table.
Yeah.
And now I find myself learning more about it and understanding how it actually affects men in particular.
For sure. And that's part in response to the culture that we're in now, right? Yeah. So parents, it's harder to be a parent. It is harder to be a parent than it was before.
Sure.
Because there are other avenues to make mistakes.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's also easier because there's other avenues to exponentially increase your amount of influence and your relationships and all these things too, right? So we've got these tools at our disposal, and the tools, like any other tool, like a knife, like a gun, it can be used for good things, it can be used for bad things.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it is something that we have to be more intentional about because you're right. We are inherently going to go after that dopamine.
Yeah.
We didn't know before. We didn't know what that was.
Exactly.
We just knew we were going after this adventure.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so now we have to be intentional and have those conversations and go, look, you're wired for that.
Yeah.
The problem is these guys are going to usurp, the relevance of that whole thing, and they're going to suck you down this rabbit hole.
Big
you're
going
to get it. You're going to get it. You're going to get it. And then you're going to have a hard time stepping away from it, and that's a really, really hard thing. So you got to be intentional about those conversations with the kids, and they will understand. You don't have to be a freaking nerd. You don't have to be Andrew Huberman, right? You don't have to be a freaking neuroscientist. Like, you don't have to be that.
Yeah.
It's just, hey, look, this is the basics of what happens in your brain.
Yep, yep.
And so you're going to go chase it one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's be productive about how we chase it.
Yeah. So funny to hear you mention Andrew Huberman because I was actually, I was listening to some of the podcasts about dopamine to learn a little bit more about it.
Yeah.
Because when I was having that conversation with my older son, I was like, dude, that's some heavy shit you're talking about. Okay. Yeah. I know a little bit about it. I understand it. So then after that, I started studying up on it, learned a little bit more. So
Huberman's a good guy to go to for that.
Yeah.
Smart,
yeah.
Smart dude. Super smart dude.
Yeah. Those are great suggestions for families and for parents because I think you also touched on it. Like, no, there's no perfect parent.
Nope.
And I think that a lot of parents sometimes put a little bit too much pressure on themselves.
Agreed.
And so it's okay to falter. It's okay to make mistakes, even as a parent. Obviously, there are mistakes we don't want to make. But
of course,
I think in this case, as far as education and as far as rearing young people to be adults, good adults, we have to also as parents be okay. Like I carried guilt around for a long time. And, I've had conversations with my sons and I've kind of explained this and, through that Discord, we've kind of like, I've been able to take a little bit of that burden off my shoulder.
Yeah.
But I know that I'm not alone. I know a lot of other parents.
Yeah. Look, no, there is no such thing as perfect and you shouldn't carry the guilt unless you realized you were making some mistakes and then you decided to just go ahead and do it anyways.
Right, exactly.
Right? Then you should, get your shit together.
Yeah,
you failed.
Yeah, yeah,
but not in a good way. You didn't fail forward. You failed backwards.
Yes.
Right? So that's the whole thing. It's like when you realize that you screwed something up, cool, man, make amends and course correct. Right? That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Is course correct. Be intentional.
Yeah. And I think, too, that one of the things that I feel like is helpful because, now we're talking to parents that are in 20s to 30s,
yep.
And so they have come up through the, through the system.
Yes, sir. Yep.
The newer system, if you will, because even back when you and I went through school, younger grade schools, the system was there, but it also was still like, we still had recess. We still had playtime. We still had a lot of.
And the educators actually had a bigger level of intellectual freedom too.
Yes.
They actually had more intellectual freedom.
Absolutely, 100%
To work and create relationships and do that. They had more.
Like
a
parent-teacher meeting back then.
Yeah.
I can remember as a student, as a kid, when we had the parent-teacher conferences, it was like completely different than the parent-teacher conferences that I went with my kids.
Yes, sir.
100% different. Like I was like it was just like you said, we're going to check this box, next. There wasn't any like real insight into what's happening in little Johnny's education.
Right.
There was no like no disclosure of some things, I mean, unless I think one time we had one complaint that which is no surprise. Both my boys can't really sit still to save their life because I can't sit still to save my life. So, but I'm like, really? That's it? That's the one piece that you're telling
that's
us?
The problem.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah,
we didn't know that already.
Yeah, totally. And like, that's a problem.
Right. And that's the other thing.
It's not even a problem. But what has the school system been trained to do? Is it was you go, hey, you know what? Your kid's five. He doesn't want to sit here and listen to boring shit all day. Hey, by the way, no adults want to sit and listen to somebody, right? So, but a five-year-old young boy, he's got a I think it's a methamphetamine deficiency, right? So we're gonna make sure we medicate him right now, right? So that we can just start to lobotomize that shit before it develops.
Man, those conversations are not an easy conversation. But I remember when the topic of medication came up with our kids from the school system, mm-hmm. and we were like, why are you saying that? Yeah. Like, why, what makes you an expert in that field to suggest that, other than the fact that you've done it to a lot of other kids?
Bingo.
You know, and that was really, that kind of is another issue that I had was like,
that's right.
Medication, there's obviously, we can say this, we can caveat everything. I think,
of course,
the audiences should know by now that we're not going to sit here and say stupid shit.
Right.
But that to me was just kind of really disingenuous.
It's a fail-safe go-to in the back pocket.
Boom.
If this boy's not docile enough, what makes my job harder, because my job, again, is to perpetuate a system. So I need to have everybody lockstep, and I've got 35 of them, and I can't possibly actually educate any of them, so I need to just move them through. And this one guy is making it so hard on me, which in turn makes me frustrated, so I get frustrated at everybody else. You know what? Let's make him a zombie. Make him a zombie.
That'll make my life easier.
Yeah, it makes my life easier. Yeah. It's much easier to push through, right?
Oh,
and again, it's not even necessarily to the fault of that teacher, because that's what he or she has been trained is the right way to do it.
Oh man, I mean, I love hearing this. Let's talk about the schools that you have developed. For those that don't know, let's do just a quick little data dump on them.
Sure. So the basics is I started working with a network called the Acton Academy Network. So, right, we talked about Lord Acton earlier, absolute power, you know, corrupts absolutely, right? So the Acton Academy Network was started by Jeff and Laura Sandifer. They actually started it out not too far from where we are right now, out here in Austin. And so they actually started the MBA program first, and then they decided to start something that was a K-12 for their own boys with no intent of doing anything bigger. A family moved away from there, went down to like LA and just said, hey, can we copy kind of what we were doing there? Like, that was really cool. And they're like, yeah, I guess, but we don't want a franchise. But if we've got partners that are interested in doing this, why don't we just create a network of people that are interested in doing this and doing it for their own kids?
Yeah.
And so as they started, they had a couple locations, and it was right about the same time that I was like, all right, I got to go build my own thing.
Yeah.
And so as I was getting ready to go build my own thing, I had somebody who had requested me to give my first TED Talk in 2015.
Wow.
Right? And she said, hey, by the way, I think what you're talking about and what you're about to design, it looks very similar to this thing called Acton Academy. There's only a couple of them, but I think you would really like it. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So let me look it up and see what that is.
Yeah.
So I went out and I came out to Austin, visited, met with Jeff and Laura, watched everything, and went just, this is what I want to build. There's already a very small network of what that is.
Nice.
So how can I jump in? So I plugged into that network. I started building the first one, the first campuses in California, outside of that little one that stayed down there in Southern California. I started building the Northern California campuses, and we very quickly built the biggest campuses in the entire network.
Wow.
While helping other entrepreneurs, I got to also start helping other entrepreneurs launch more. So now we have over 300 campuses. I don't even operate the ones in Northern California anymore. I gave those to my employees, operate all of those. Or my former employees operate, like, that's theirs now. Like,
yeah.
They're rocking it. And we got about 300 campuses globally.
Wow.
26 countries, I think, 41 states, something like that.
That's impressive.
It's a really good network, man.
That is.
And it's all, these are parentpreneurs.
Yeah.
You know, they're all parentpreneurs. Right?
I love that.
Like, I want to do this for my kids.
That's awesome.
It's good, man. It's good.
So for parents that are looking to try to, like, what's the biggest obstacle for parents? Or I should say, what makes the parents pull the trigger to get involved in the program?
Yeah, it's we get a mix, right? Like I said, public school will always be our biggest advocate because they're always going to screw something up. So a big, you know, depending on the state too, there's a little bit, you know, there's differences, but in California specifically, like the vaccine mandate had a lot of people going, okay, there's got to be a way to do something different, right?
Yeah.
All the critical race theory, gender theory, all of this kind of stuff that's coming in is continuously pushing people to look outside.
Yeah.
So that's a huge part. But then you also have people that are looking for just, they're starting to get the word that, wait a second, this school thing was actually not built for people. So you do have some that are coming out and looking for that. Or yeah. we've always homeschooled because we knew school was off, but we don't know exactly what we're... So, you know, people are coming from various backgrounds.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When they, like, how... I guess the question that I'm trying to formulate in my head has to do with parents that come to the program.
Yeah.
How is there like, is there like a, oh my God, we're so happy we did this kind of moment? And if so, when does that happen? Yes. Does it happen right away or so does it happen like 6 weeks?
Such
in?
A great question. Such a great question. So I'm going to say this is not just for these campuses in general. I've also helped people start small little co-ops.
Yeah.
And then I've got families that, you know, I've got 150 or so families that are in this home education tribe that I walk them through what that looks like to home educate at a high level too, right? So anybody coming to these, if they are coming from, no matter what the background is, but most of all of them came through a conveyor belt schooling themselves, that golden moment, right,
yes.
is really towards the beginning. They're like, oh my gosh, yes,
yeah,
this is great. And they're so excited and they're over the moon. They're super emotional. They're like, oh my gosh, this is great. And it's really kind of this honeymoon thing. And then the fear starts creeping back in.
What?
And then the fear starts creeping back in because,
why?
Because they've been taught that at a certain age, little Johnny's supposed to be doing this.
Yeah.
And then when he gets a little older, he's supposed to be doing this. Then he's supposed to be doing this, right?
Right.
And we're going, okay, he'll get to that.
Yeah, yeah. Don't worry.
Well, don't worry about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right now we're focusing on this. And like, oh, but he's now behind, as if that's a thing. It's not a
they're
thing.
They're still in the cult.
But they're still in the cult. Right? So I can intellectually walk anybody through this. But what happens is it's the emotional attachment to the cult that keeps pulling them back.
Wow.
So there's a lot of parents. So what I've, you know, tried to do with all of this now is I try to have continuous presence with the parents, educating them, especially in the part where they're super excited.
Yeah.
Going, and look, here's why you're making the decision. And look, here's what actual development looks like. And look, let's think ahead. Let's go through here. Hey, by the way, there's not all these boxes to check and you're worried about, you know, math. Okay, cool. Let's start talking about that. What math does the person actually need? And did you know that you could go from I've never even seen a number to wildly proficient in algebra in about 100 hours total?
Yeah.
Once you're ready for it?
Yeah.
Total.
Yeah.
Not 12 years.
Yeah.
100 hours.
Yeah.
Total.
Yeah.
Once you're ready for it developmentally.
Yeah.
So you can't tell somebody that, and actually you can, actually you might be able to tell, I was going to say, you can't tell somebody that didn't start doing any kind of real math work until, you know, they're 12 and somebody else has started doing it at 5 when they're 16. Can you tell? Actually, the one that waited until they were developmentally kind of ready for it is actually probably better at it and likes it more.
Interesting.
Because we've actually gone over academia early and that's damaging too. So
I like when you said, when you tied in it to liked it more.
Yep.
Because that was something that
because they saw the value in it.
Yeah. Well, it's liked, but I think the developmental portion was also a big part.
Yes, sir.
They liked the learning challenge.
Yes, sir.
Or they appreciated the learning challenge
because
they were ready for that learning challenge.
Correct. Yep.
Like I could see that. And you know, it's that must be frustrating to see parents that start to second guess themselves.
Sure.
Halfway, you know, like into that honeymoon stage that
sure.
you mentioned.
Yeah.
That's got to be frustrating. Are there, I mean, this has been around for a while. So the success stories that you have, which should number in the hundreds, if not thousands.
There's a ton.
Yeah.
So, but part of it is, so I can give you success stories. I can give you plenty of them.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to, because there's some of them. I mean, I can see with my own kids that
I love
to brag on too, right? So I've got plenty of these. Just like the caveat of, hey, if you're in the system and you're a good human, I'm still on your side as a teacher, right? So there's another caveat with this, though.
Yeah.
So I can give you the success stories, but one, it doesn't mean that this is it's like a panacea. These are success stories born out of them having to do hard things.
Right.
It's not like they never struggled.
Right.
Some parents are thinking it's going to be sunshine and rainbows and my kid's never going to struggle. No, they're actually going to struggle kind of more. That's the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So they're actually going to take on harder things earlier.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for no struggle, that's not it. And
then
I also am just always careful about this being I don't ever want it to turn into a comparison game.
Right.
Where you go, oh, Matt's daughters bought horses when they were 9 and 7 with the businesses they were running out of the school. True story.
Oh my goodness.
Right?
Wow.
So when I say affect it, like,
yeah.
Right. So there's a success story. That's great. But what happens is parents hear that and go, my 9 and 7 year old aren't buying any horses. It's like, shut the fuck up. That's okay. That doesn't make that's any, not
yeah.
the point.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I always want to be careful not to use it as like a thing to dangle out there that's for a good anything point, like that,
because
right?
You, obviously, you don't want that right. comparison because then there becomes some, then you're back into the cult almost.
You're back in the cult yes, almost, right? So yes. that's not it. Ugh. So, but you know, that said, so we've got, so yeah, those are, you know, my dad, we have business fairs and we've had, you know, kids making $5,000 in 3 hours on a Saturday with the businesses that they're running, right? That's amazing. I can tell you, you walk into my, you know, into the Roseville campus in California that I opened, and you had a young person who was high school age, who was the chef, who had gone down to Weston A. Price, learned how to be the chef, and they were actually responsible for taking all of the lunch orders, making real food every day, not heating shit up like, you know, prison food, right? He's making real things every day, hiring middle schoolers to come in and be the sous chef, and they're responsible for getting that out.
Wow. Right?
You've got them taking
that's
on
awesome.
Like the cleaning on campuses is all done by young heroes, the direct instructions done by young heroes. The 17-year-old man who was a young man who was actually at one of our Austin campuses out here, who was like, ooh, I see this job, and I want to say it was with like YouTube or somebody, but it was, I see this job. Oh, I really want this job. It's creating this content. So I'm going to apply for it, even though it says college degree required.
Yeah.
I'm 17. I'm still in high school. Yeah, actually. Yeah. Applies for it. Didn't hear anything. Goes back to contact the CEO later and just says, hey, just so you know, I applied for this. I totally understand why you wouldn't hire a 17-year-old, especially with those requirements that you had. But I do think that my work here is something that you guys could benefit. Don't even have to give me credit. I just want you to see this and have it. Use it if you want. Throw it away if you don't. I just want to let you know this was the opportunity of a lifetime to even just apply it something like this. CEO calls him up and goes, you know what? You're right. And this job is the work that you just did is amazing. We want you to start for us right now. He just started his senior year. He's like, you know, I still have to finish high school. He's like, oh, you know, do it while you're doing high school. And he was making $100,000 a year doing this while he's finishing his senior year. Right. I had a 17-year-old who got a job offer at 17. He had to be 18 for the specific job, but he had that job offer so that as soon as he graduated and he walked off stage, and the company that hired him had only ever hired college degree. They're a nationwide company. They'd only ever hired somebody with college degrees, and they changed their entire structure so they could take him when he was 18.
Wow.
And come straight out of high school, and he went straight into a leadership career level position.
Wow. Right?
So we've got story after story story after story.
Yeah.
But I always just want to give those caveats in there.
I think that's smart. The second guessing of oneself
sure.
as a parent
yep.
is not necessarily a byproduct of the success that you're seeing. It's still the byproduct of the cult mentality that
yes,
is
sir.
Sneaking in there. So even those stories may still not really address the real issue, which is they're
right.
still tied. They're still plugged into the matrix, if you will.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So yeah. That's
birds born in a cage think flying is an illness, right? It's that.
I love that
whole thing.
That's a good one. Yeah. Let me ask you this. What was the best advice you were given by a mentor?
Ooh, that's a good question. Because when I start to think of mentors,
yeah.
and I've had a good amount, I always have mentors, kind of compartmentalized.
I like that.
Right. So I've got Jeff Gonzalez may be a mentor to me, but it's likely in one specific area or
for
one
sure.
or two areas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've got multiple mentors in multiple areas. Gosh, there's one that's coming to mind, and this in itself is a complete, hey, you don't have to pay taxes and it's actually illegal to be able to get away. Like, that was one thing that was brought to my attention earlier where I'm like, what? And so it started to give me insight to all the games that are being played in all of these systems.
Oh,
so I had a billionaire mentor of mine go, yeah, I pay no taxes. And I go, well, that's because you're a billionaire. He's like, nope, nobody has to. There's actually ways that you can get around that and be outside the system altogether, and it's perfectly legal. Most people just
don't even know
a game that you're allowed to play. And I was like, what? And he's like, I'll tell you, I'll teach it to you some other time. I'm like, what the hell? Right?
Oh,
boom.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Boom. And it was the same thing as like one of my mentors in the health and fitness. So there's a gentleman named Rob Wolf.
Oh, I love Rob.
Yeah, dude. Rob's great, man. So I went to it. So
Rob, if you're listening, I'm going to get you on this podcast. I promise.
Dude, Rob is freaking great.
Yeah.
So I got to first meet Rob in Chico when he still lived. I went to Chico State. He was in Chico.
No kidding.
Right? And so I went to this like Rob Wolf seminar in Chico.
Oh my God.
And I was in there. And it was the same kind of thing on the system, from a systemic point of view. had some doctors in there, and I'm just having my mind blown about robotics. I was a kinesiology major, not because of anything other than I like sports.
And sure,
like,
yeah.
I don't know who I am, so what am I doing?
Yeah.
Right? So I was learning things in like nutrition class, and then Rob was like, no, this is how the body actually works. This is what's going on. I'm like, holy shit. And then we had a bunch of doctors that were in there that were like, hey, by the way, we're not trained on this at all. Doctors know nothing about nutrition. And I'm like, you don't know anything about nutrition? Your doctors are like, we don't know anything about nutrition. We know as much as you do in your semester of kinesiology. I'm like, holy shit. So it's like all of these, right? So like school, yep, there's a game. Medicine, there's a freaking game.
There's being played.
Taxes and finance, there's a game.
Yeah.
And so that's the first one that comes to mind because it's been the most prevalent, I think, recently.
Interesting.
You know, so many different mentors in various areas and still.
I know.
And by the way, when I say mentors, sometimes they're real people. Sometimes I got this from Napoleon Hill. Sometimes they're real people. Sometimes they're fictional characters. Sometimes
give me an example.
Tyler Durden's a mentor. Right? Like Tyler, he's a mentor sometimes. Yeah, now I understand he's not the poster child for mental health. But I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Reading the book first and then watching the movie, that was a big part of me in my 20s of going, why do I care so much about what other people think?
Yeah.
Why do humans do that in general?
Yeah.
How do I get rid of that?
Oh,
how do I get rid of that need?
Oh, so true.
To the need to please.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean I want to be a jerk. It doesn't mean I want to blow shit up like he's doing. It just means, why am I giving people who don't care about me, why am I trying to impress them to buy, the whole things you don't need to impress people you don't like, kind of like
exactly.
Money you don't have.
You know,
like, what the hell am I doing? Him.
That's a good example.
William Wallace, right?
Oh,
Brave. I remember at 14 watching that movie in the theater, and when he said, every man dies, not every man really lives, right? At 14, man, I went, okay, I don't know what that means to me right now, but I'm never going to forget that.
But I know that's important.
That's it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I say mentors, there's that happens too.
Yeah. So, and I think that's great because what that does is that opens you up. You're no longer put in self-imposed restrictions on what can help influence your direction.
Bingo.
Your path.
Bingo.
You limit yourself to some degree if you are only like, oh, this is it. This is the only thing I'm really looking at.
And I think back to what you said, curiosity.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
The word, right?
Yeah,
as soon as we know it,
yeah.
As soon as we know, we shut curiosity off.
Oh, so true.
And
man,
then we're,
Tim does this all the time too. He's like, this is my shooting coach. This is my fighting coach.
Yeah.
This is my lifting coach. And he has all these coaches that are basically in a sense the same thing as a mentor.
Yes, sir.
And that has been another huge thing that has kind of opened my eyes to a lot of things. Because, the reality is that we all want to be good in all facets of our lives,
right.
But we really are probably good in only one single facet.
Yeah.
Because that's our focus.
That's our focus, right?
Exactly.
And so then, it's not like those other parts of your life go away.
Yeah, exactly.
So great, man. So you can exponentially increase your efficacy by getting somebody who is, that's their focus.
That's it, man.
That's it.
And I'll tell you, that's the other thing too. Basically growing up in the military, mm-hmm. as far as my young adult life, my mentors were all my senior enlisted guys, all my guys and some officers as well. And they, I didn't realize that they were mentors to me. They were telling me how to do things. They were showing me the ropes. They were giving me guidance and telling me what to do and what not to do. And I didn't realize that they were mentors until much, much later in life. When it was my turn to be a mentor, when it was my turn to pass that knowledge down to the juniors and bring them up. And so, I try to encourage, not only do you want to seek out mentors, but you also want to mentor people.
That's right.
With the information that you have to share that information.
Bingo.
Because that is only going to help you. I mean, I think you could probably agree with this. If you want to get really good at something, teach it to somebody else.
Of course.
And that's one way of being a mentor.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. I always picture, when I think about it, I always picture the side of a mountain. And I picture it from your standpoint, you should always be a hand up and be getting pulled up.
Yeah.
And you should also have a hand down and be pulling somebody up with you.
I love that.
Right? Like, I always think of it that way. There are always people that I am learning from. And at various times, those two people right there might flip-flop, right? And I'm being led, and then I'm leading this one. I mean, that could be.
That's a great way to look at that.
My own kids have mentored me in certain areas. I think I think I'm the parent that I am. Partially, I give part of that credit to my oldest daughter, right? And some mistake's there, and she calls me out on it when she's 2 or 3. You know what I mean? Yes. It's like, Daddy, I wish this is how you would handle that. And it's like, huh, you're right. And that's how I'm going to handle it from now on. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. I had a very sincere conversation with one of my sons. He was like, you know that stuff doesn't work, Dad. Yeah. That stuff didn't work when I was younger. It's not going to work now. Yeah. And I'm like, okay,
got it.
Fine. Thank you. Fair enough.
Yep. Thanks, bud.
Appreciate you sharing.
That's funny. It's great, though.
It is, but it's also valuable to be able to open up and be willing to take on that information. And sometimes it can be criticism, but being open to it, especially from your loved ones.
Of course.
That's the key. It's like, it's always coming from a place of love, or it's always hopefully going to come from a place of love, but.
That's right.
It's part of the bigger picture.
That's right. You know, it's. I don't remember who said it, but it was something to the effect of like it's the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain an idea without immediately accepting it. And I think that's.
Oh yeah.
I think that's the way. It's like, okay, I'm gonna take this information in, and I'm just gonna kind of run it through a filter first. Yeah. Like I'm gonna go, okay, is there evidence to show what they're saying is correct? That is maybe better evidence than whatever the operating system is that I have right now.
Oh,
and
I love that.
Who is giving me that too, because the messenger does matter, as Churchill said, right? So, the messenger does matter too. So if it's somebody that is, if it is, Nancy Pants 47 on Instagram, who's never done shit, but wants to tell me how to run a, open a school.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Whatever,
a little bit.
Right. Right. But I'll listen. Okay. Whatever, but if it's legit, okay, well, you know what? Maybe I do need to think about that. And I'm going to go ahead and beat that idea to death, just like I'm going to beat all of my own ideas to death. Yes. I'm going to argue with myself until I can't beat it to death anymore. And I think that's right where I am now on this situation. But I'm open to changing that later if better evidence comes along. Like, that's civil discourse in a nutshell.
First of all, that is awesome, because, being in the gun community, I've had a lot of vile thrown my way, and I've been a target in many cases.
Sure.
And whenever I try to have a discussion with somebody, I truly try to set the tone in the very beginning, which is, whatever arguments that you are going to come at me with, I've already had those arguments.
Yep.
I've already argued in my mind.
Yep.
I believe that for my convictions to be strong, I have to attack them. I have to look for failures or weaknesses. And if there are, I should discover them and then I should hopefully change them. But that doesn't mean that I'm not willing to listen to what you have, because you may also bring something to the table that I hadn't thought about.
Sure.
And so your job is to validate my convictions or to identify an area in my convictions that maybe needs to change.
Right.
And I'm open to that.
That's right. And not the straw man. Not the, hey, Jeff, you suck because. Let's talk about my ideas.
Yeah. Exactly. And I've been really successful when I've gone into a discussion like that.
Yeah.
Mostly because a lot of times, it kind of like puts everybody in more of a like less defensive posture.
Yes.
What do you have? Come bring it to me. I'm open to it.
That's right.
But I also try to caveat it with, but I need you to have the same mentality.
That's right.
You should have already had these arguments already with yourself.
Right.
I should then present some ideas that should challenge them.
Yes.
And maybe change them, or maybe not.
Or maybe not.
Exactly.
And then we need to know that it's okay to walk away with neither mind changed too.
And that's another thing.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Right. We don't have to sit here and beat each other up until somebody goes, okay, I submit to your ideas.
You're right.
Right. We can just go, hey, well, let's have a great conversation. Give me your best evidence. I'll give you mine.
Yeah.
We'll walk away. We may agree on some things. We may disagree.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's still okay.
Yeah. And one of the things, too, I try to tell people is like, hey, listen, I might need some time to digest all this stuff.
Right.
So, don't feel upset just because I don't jump onto your your wagon right here. Let me mull this over. Yep. Let me, because, the way that my mind works, my brain works, is that it's like you were saying, I will take on some information, but I don't always take that information and automatically change my viewpoints. I want to mull it over and toss it around and then come up with,
For sure. And that's how it's going to actually take root or not anyways, because you're going to sit there and go, okay, you're going to beat up.
She
and
was
go,
right. Or
so
that
what,
makes
and
sense.
What would this look like if I applied it in my life? Yes. Like, how would this all play out? Right. And you're actually going to really, truly latch onto something or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, good for you.
Mm. All right. This is a tough question, but I like to ask this question.
All right.
How do you deal with failure?
I mean, it's not a tough question at all.
True.
It's not a tough question at all, man. I have tried to. So the emotional part of failure is always harder than the intellectual part, at this point, right?
For sure.
So it's like damn it. But I have at least been working to train myself to go, you know, to go, okay, so what is this? Where this is good.
Yeah.
Why is it good though?
Yeah.
You know, because right now it hurts a little bit. Doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
But this is
I'm fragile.
Right? Yeah. So it's like, damn it. But what's the good that's going to come out of this? Yeah. What does this mean? What does this mean for my trajectory? What do I have to do? So I will take it on the chin from the emotional standpoint now.
Yeah.
But then try as quickly as I can. I'll grieve, you know, the loss of the mess up, the mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll allow myself to grieve, you know, 3 to 5 minutes. And then I'll go, okay, what's the silver lining in this? Because there has to be one.
Ah, that's true.
And so, okay, let's move and go, okay, what do I need to do next? You know, that's how I look at it now.
I love hearing that. That's great. And I try to do something similar when I'm on the firing line. I demonstrate everything for the students to see.
Yeah.
And every now and then, you know, the demo doesn't go well or, you know, it didn't hit the bullseye or whatever it is. And I always remind students in the beginning of the class, hey, even monkeys fall out of trees.
That's right.
But when I make a mistake, I also try to emphasize to the students, hey, listen, if I'm at my skill level, if I'm making a mistake, then it should be okay
for
you to make a mistake.
Oh, yeah.
So I like your idea about I'll grieve for my mistake. I wait a little bit longer. I wait until like at the end of the day, and then I'll just beat myself up.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll go Red Ross on myself.
So I guess I should give context too, because it depends on what kind of mistake we're talking about.
Yeah, of course, I'm talking about
if it's something on kind of a macro scale,
yeah,
that's where I'm going to have kind of the grieving and go, okay, now, so then what does this mean? Where do I go, right? Yeah. If it's something that's a micro, if I'm standing on stage and I'm giving a keynote and I got 2,000 people in the audience and I didn't time the joke right, or I misspoke, or I gave the wrong data. I'll do the same thing. I'll go back later and be like, you freaking moron, you know, but then I'm just like, whatever. Because in the moment, you just have to pivot and do exactly what you said. You either make it a learning moment, or you just walk right through it, right? Because you're in the midst of something else, and it's true. Nobody's dying because I said something stupid.
You know? I love hearing that. Yeah. That's a good one. It was funny, too, because that was a major milestone for me to some extent, because when I was younger, I hated making mistakes.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I hated I hated failing. It was a hard thing for me to come to grips with. Like failing in my life early on was part. Now as I sit here after talking with you for this podcast, I realized that failure was part of a system that had been kind of driven into me.
Yep.
So it wasn't until much later in my adult life that failure became the gift that I see it as now.
Yeah.
You know, and I look back and I kind of regret, because the other thing I try to share with people is that my unwillingness to fail meant that I also didn't grow.
Yes.
I mean, I was already good and competent at what I did, but I didn't grow beyond that.
That's right. Because you weren't willing to fail. And so sometimes that would just lock down, you know, your willingness to take other risks.
Exactly.
Things like that would have given you even, you know, a better outcome too.
That's so true.
So, and all of us can find places in our life where we've done that exactly.
Oh
that.
My God. So
you know,
true.
But again, it's like, how do I get myself to get out of that mindset? And I look at a free, you know, you look at a free lion roaming and he goes after that gazelle and he doesn't get it. He doesn't go, I guess I don't get to eat anymore. He's like, where's the next freaking gazelle?
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to get after
this. Yeah.
You know?
So true.
Same thing.
All right, let's start wrapping up. I got a final question for you.
Yes, sir.
What is the biggest takeaway you want the audience to walk off with?
Stop living in fear. 100%, dude. 100%.
Love
so
that.
Most people live in fear.
Not even a hesitation.
No, it's not. Because
I love
it's
that.
The biggest epidemic that I think we've got, right? So we have made fear our cultural virtue, sort of, right? So it's become a virtue where it's like, as long as I can be afraid of something, I want to be afraid of the, you know, we tell our kids not to be afraid of the boogeyman, but we're afraid of our everything in our freaking everyday life. So
God. Stop
living in fear. Stop living in fear of, okay, well, what if? Stop living in fear of, I got to bubble wrap my kids. Stop living in fear of, I've got to appease somebody and check somebody's box. Stop living in fear of, oh, but if I say this out loud, even though I really believe it and I think it could help some people, it's going to piss off mom or dad. It's going to piss off my neighbors. It's going to piss off my, you know, stop living in fear. It doesn't mean to be reckless. It means to be intentional. And it means that sometimes you're going to have to get uncomfortable and get comfortable with that.
It's I love okay, that.
Right? Get comfortable with that. Stop living in fear.
First of all, that's beautiful. And we had a saying in the teams, get comfortable being uncomfortable.
That's right.
And that was a driving force there.
That's right, man.
All right. So where can folks learn more about all the good things that you're doing?
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. You know, if they want to connect with me directly, my Instagram is probably where I'm most active, just at my name. But people can reach out to me directly to matt@apogeestrong.com.
Perfect.
Shoot me an email if there's any way that I can help. Check out what we're doing at Apogee Strong for the young men.
Yeah.
We're launching our dad's program here in January
awesome.
As well. So,
oh, keep us posted on that.
So
we'll
reach out around that.
This podcast will probably post in about, they'll take a week off for holidays, and I'm thinking it'll probably be the early part of January.
Cool.
So
super cool.
Keep us posted with all
for
that.
Sure,
we'll
man.
Put it all in the show notes
awesome.
And everything
thank
like
you,
that.
Thank you, brother.
All right, folks. Well, that's a wrap. I want to thank you, Matt, for coming on the show. This
pleasure.
Was awesome. It really was. This was very close to the chest for me as far as listening to everything that you had. I want to thank our audience for tuning in. Thank our sponsors. Thank the men and women for holding the line. Mm-hmm. Check out all our previous podcasts by visiting thebulletproofworkshop.com. You can learn more about me and training opportunities by visiting tridentconcepts.com. Until then, I'm Jeff Gonzalez, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Workshop podcast. Stay safe or be dangerous.